Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
How is your interest anything but a religious view? The issue of when life begins has been hotly debated by philosophers since the beginning of time. It's still debated in religions. So when you say this is the only right that takes away from the state the ability to protect a life, that's a religious view, isn't it?
That's Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor speaking during oral argument for Dobbs v. Jackson, repeating an old chestnut of the pro-abortion arguments. Not really an argument, just kind of a dodge that the question of when life begins is a religious question, and even among those who entertain the religious question, they can't agree, so the court has no business even considering such things. Where did she get that idea, and does it amount to a legal argument or just changing the subject? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 18th of January. We're going to be talking about the justice's religious view abortion argument with Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker, Jesus Blessing the Children in Luke chapter 18. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us to talk about parental regret, and Pastor Heath Curtis on the impact of the pandemic on church offerings and budgets. Joining us to discuss Justice Sonia Sotomayor's religious view abortion argument, Scott Klusendorf. He's president of Life Training Institute, author of the book The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture, and a recent column for World Magazine titled A Bad Faith Argument. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Where did the justice get this argument?
I think it comes from Roe v. Wade, where Justice Harry Blackmun said that we cannot decide if the unborn are human because we don't have agreement with philosophers. We don't have agreement with scientists. We don't have agreement with the religious community. Therefore, the decision must be left to the individual woman. But of course, in saying that we have to leave the choice to have an abortion for all practical purposes up until the moment of birth, Justice Blackmun really was deciding when life begins, in that it doesn't begin until birth. So I think that's where Sotomayor was getting her line of reasoning.
You say that Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey, the two bedrock cases for abortion on demand in the United States for the last half century, are on life support. Why?
The Dobbs case presents a direct challenge to Roe and Casey. And here's why. The question before the court is this: does the Constitution prohibit states from restricting abortion before fetal viability? Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey say yes, that restrictions prior to viability, which the court placed at around 24 weeks, unduly burden women seeking abortions. The Mississippi law that's being argued in the Dobbs case, which bans nearly all abortions after 15 weeks, says no, the state can protect unborn humans prior to viability. Therein lies the problem, Todd. The court cannot reasonably uphold the Mississippi law, which bans abortion after 15 weeks, without striking Roe and Casey, which say you can't ban it until 24 weeks. And if the case, if the court strikes those cases, Roe and Casey, the alleged constitutional right to an abortion is no more.
So what is Justice Sotomayor's basic argument with regard to what she calls a religious view? Outline it for us.
She's basically saying two things, and these are undefended premises in her argument. Number one, religious truth claims don't count as real knowledge. Well, that can be debated. I mean, for example, Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail assumes the Imago Dei, humans being made in the image of God. Should we toss that out because it's quote, religious, our Declaration of Independence grounds our natural fundamental rights in the existence of a transcendent creator. Should we toss all those because they happen to be linked to religion? So she's making this claim that she doesn't defend, she just assumes it. But more particularly, she's going to argue that because people disagree, nobody's right. And that argument is deeply, deeply problematic, as I think anybody who stops to think about it can see right away. First of all, how does it follow, Todd, that because people disagree, there's no right answer? They once disagreed on slavery. They once disagreed on women voting. They once disagreed on spousal abuse. I mean, the list goes on and on. Does it follow there was no truth to be known on those questions? Well, of course not. But I think even more troubling for her, if the presence of disagreement means nobody is right, her own argument in favor of abortion is refuted because pro-lifers disagree with it. But also the idea that the question of when life begins is somehow theological and therefore unresolvable is simply false. The question of when human life begins is not a theological question. How we value human beings is, but not the question, when does life begin? That question, when does life begin, is an empirical question, and the answer is found in the science of embryology, not a theological text. But the justice tried to make it sound like this was strictly a theological question.
In fact, if you take her argument at the face of it, it is almost as though the medical discipline of embryology doesn't exist. We do not study. Yes. We don't know anything what's going on in the womb. It's a mystery.
Yeah, exactly right. And by the way, even as early as 1973, when Roe was handed down, we knew what the facts of embryology were. We knew when life begins. The court just chose to ignore it and cast the issue as strictly one of subjective religious preference. And I think Sotomayor is trying to do the same thing here. But that's not going to work. We have too much evidence today. We have ultrasonography. I mean, my goodness, we have gender reveal parties everywhere on social media, dozens every day, where we're going to see either a light blue cloud or a pink one. I mean, people know what's in the womb now. This is common knowledge. And what the justice was trying to do was cloud an obvious issue.
Is that why you say that to label this as a religious argument and therefore something that is a profound mystery that we can't base any kind of decisions on? You say it's a dodge, not a refutation.
Well, it really is, because arguments are either sound or unsound, valid or invalid. And you've got to show that an argument fails the validity test or the soundness test before you can effectively refute it. Look, the pro-life argument is real simple. It's wrong to intentionally kill innocent human beings. That's premise one. Premise two, abortion intentionally kills innocent human beings. Conclusion, therefore abortion's wrong. Now, the justice can either show that the conclusion doesn't pop out logically, or she can show that one or more of those premises is false. She does none of that. All she does is label the argument religious, and that's a dodge. That's not doing the hard work of actually refuting the argument based on available evidence. It's seeking to sidestep it, to get out of having to do that hard work.
The implication of her assertion is that the Mississippi law wrongly imposes a purely religious view on the populace. Is that right?
No, it's not. And this is something pro-lifers need to pay very particular attention to, especially if Roe v. Wade and Casey are struck down, as I am confident they will be. Here's what we need to remember. Pro-lifers are not imposing their views on anyone. Rather, we are proposing our views in hopes that our fellow citizens will vote them into law. In other words, pro-life Christians are doing exactly what every other citizen in this country gets to do, make a case for what they believe and hope that laws will reflect that case. That's how a constitutional republic like ours works. And you cannot just say to a whole segment of the population that happens to be religious, oh, you don't get to participate in your own government like everybody else does. You have to sit this one out on issues you care about because we're just going to deem them religious. That is unfair. It is intellectually lazy, and pro-lifers should have none of it.
So I want to explore that point you just made a little bit more, that we are not imposing our views, we are proposing them. That seems to be at the very heart of a post-Roe America, that
it is.
We need to work through the system.
Exactly right. See, here's what Roe did. Roe v. Wade took the abortion issue away from the executive and legislative branches of government and assigned it solely to the courts. In other words, in Roe v. Wade, the justices said, we alone here at the federal bench will determine substantial abortion policy. You at the executive and legislative branches, which speak for the people, have no say in this. If Roe and Casey are overturned, it's going to return the issue to the states, meaning the people, through their elected officials, will get their voice back on the issue. And that means, Todd, pro-life Christians have to be equipped to defend their case persuasively, because now we get our voice back. And one of the first things we're going to hear is a resurrection of this tired old argument that we heard the justice say during the oral arguments that, oh, that's a religious view, therefore it's not valid here. We can't have that. We should utterly reject that.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We're talking about Justice Sonia Sotomayor's religious view abortion argument. Scott is president of Life Training Institute, and when we come back, he says it is no more religious to claim that the unborn humans have value prior to their viability than to claim that they don't. We'll find out what he means next. Issues Etc. surpassed more than 6.4 million downloads during 2021. You can help us reach more listeners this year. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Old theology, new technology. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Now that you have packed away the Christmas ornaments and chrismons for the season, it's time for some contemplation. Those chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam. The glitter has dropped off and they're being held together with toothpicks. Don't celebrate another Christmas harkening back to the age of glitter balls. See Ad Crucem's beautifully designed Christmons, together with our book describing how they fit into the church year. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Male and female, he created them. Thus, the Lord made Adam and Eve and then put them in relationship to each other as husband and wife. This relationship of husband and wife is a frequent theme throughout the scriptures, and it also happens to be the theme of the January issue of the Lutheran Witness. We talk about husbands and wives, how modern media, particularly children's movies, portray fathers. Visit cph.org/witness to order your copy or visit our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the religious view abortion argument. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. Scott, you say that it is no more religious to claim that the unborn human has value prior to viability and a right to life than to claim they don't. What do you mean?
Look, you either believe each and every human being has an equal right to life or you don't. And however you answer that question, you will be doing metaphysics. In other words, answering questions about ultimate being or grounding. The pro-life view is that all humans, in virtue of the kind of thing they are, have intrinsic value, meaning their value comes from their essence, not their performance. The pro-abortion worldview says, no, your essence or nature means nothing. There's nothing particularly special about being human any more than being a cockroach. What matters is your performance ability. Do you have cognitive awareness? Do you have self-awareness? Do you have the ability to interact with your environment? Until you can perform with those functions, you have no value and a right to life. Now, notice this. Both sides of the debate, the pro-life side and the pro-abortion side, are answering the exact same question. What makes humans valuable in the first place? That is inherently a metaphysical, theological question. So if the pro-life view is disqualified for its alleged ties to metaphysics, so is the pro-abortion one.
It sounds as though you are saying that for pro-lifers, the real debate or the meat of the debate really has yet to begin. We need all the more to have our arguments defending the unborn ready should Roe go the way of the dinosaur.
You're right on. That's exactly the crux of the whole thing right here. We have got to be equipped to engage. And it's true. We really haven't had the debate. What Roe v. Wade did is foreclose on there being a substantial debate on the issues surrounding abortion, because the courts had just settled it themselves and said, we're alone going to decide what happens here. If it gets returned to the states, at least half of the states that haven't already put up some kind of abortion policy, either pro-life or pro-abortion, are going to have a chance to have it out on the question. They're going to be battlegrounds over who counts as one of us. And the worldview questions, namely, who counts as one of us? What is the nature of truth? Can truth be known when it comes to determining human value? These questions are now going to get moved into the public awareness where they should have been all along, but because of Roe, they were co-opted.
Now, what is that going to look like for pro-lifers? That's going to be a lot of work. That means not just making statements or, as valuable as it is, marching in Washington and things like that. Those things certainly need to continue, but you're talking about real grassroots political activity.
We are going to have to step our game up big time. My colleague Greg Cunningham puts it well. He says there are more people working full-time to kill babies than there are working full-time to save them. And that's because saving babies is very expensive while killing them is very profitable. And until we get a more professionalized pro-life movement, meaning a movement where people get the kind of training they need to engage professionally at all levels, politically, culturally, in our churches, at the lay level, we are going to have to get more full-time people working to save children who choose pro-life advocacy as a vocation. And here's the troubling thing about this, Todd. We could spend a whole show on this question alone. How many Christian colleges offer a major aimed at undergraduates, a major that would equip them to do full-time pro-life advocacy, an applied bioethics major, let's call it? How many? If you said one, you're one too many. We aren't taking this seriously, and we need to take it seriously. I am happy to say that this summer, we're going to be offering that kind of training at two locations, at South Florida Bible College and Seminary and Cedarville University in Ohio. But that's just the start. We need 20 schools doing this kind of thing, not just two.
So make the case here that the argument put forth by Justice Sonia Sotomayor during the Dobbs oral argument and put forth so commonly in the rest of the pro-abortion debate is intellectually dishonest.
Well, first of all, it's lazy because it dodges the real question. Is the argument valid? Is the argument sound? It dodges those questions and instead just dismisses the whole thing as being religious. That's intellectual laziness. It's also a very poor way to argue. I mean, as if somehow the absence of agreement means nobody's right. We've got a whole history, as we said a moment ago, of issues where our country has wrestled with things, and there was no agreement, but eventually the law forged an agreement. So just because people disagree doesn't mean we can't arrive at the right answer. And then finally, I would say that, again, pro-lifers are not imposing their views wrongly. They're not imposing their views any more than Martin Luther King imposed his at all. They're simply proposing their views in hopes that their fellow citizens will agree, and that's how a constitutional republic works.
Were you disappointed or surprised to hear that a sitting justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, who has a large staff, a budget that is adequate to do whatever research is necessary, and legal resources of that kind at the very highest level, was taken in and propagated this kind of religious view argument?
I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. In fact, I think it was intentional on her part. Look, it's been intentional since Roe v. Wade to dodge the real issue, to answer the question, what is the unborn, which lies at the heart of the abortion debate. Justice Blackmun tried to dodge the issue, and now we have Sotomayor trying to dodge that question and simply dismiss it as some kind of religious thing we can get no right answer on. This is intentional, Todd. It's not that she was caught off guard. Look, she didn't get through law school and get to be a federal judge by being simply stupid. I do realize she made some rather stupid claims about COVID last week, but that aside, she's not dumb when it comes to abortion. She was trying to change the subject. Here's the question, the only question that mattered in Dobbs. And if you care about the rule of law, this is what you zero in on. Does the Constitution forbid restricting abortion before viability? The justice should stick to that question rather than arguing in bad faith.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. He's author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture, and a recent column for World Magazine titled A Bad Faith Argument. You can purchase this book and find out more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Scott, thank you very much, and keep up that good work.
Thank you, my friend.
Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson on this Tuesday, January the 18th. We'll talk about Jesus blessing the little children in Luke chapter 18 next.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Is James' teaching on faith, works, and justification reconcilable with the rest of Scripture? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is the new Concordia Commentary on James. It's written by Issues Etc. guest Dr. Curtis Giese. The Concordia Commentary on James is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Concordia Commentary on James, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's fables and classic children's literature, math and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
This is Deaconess Betsy Dodgers at Concordia University Chicago, inviting all high school students to attend the annual Careers for Christ weekend in person on our beautiful campus in River Forest. Careers for Christ is February 4th through 6th. You'll have the opportunity to learn about professional church vocations while having fun with CUC staff, faculty, and students. For more information, visit cuchicago.edu/c. 4C.